The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
All right, looking forward to this. Tonight we premiere our next 30 for 30. It's Al Davis versus the NFL with a look at one of the greatest rivalries the sport ever produced between the former Raider owner, the legendary Davis, and the former NFL commissioner, Pete Rozelle. They clashed for three decades. That's tonight, 9 Eastern, on ESPN and the ESPN app. That should be terrific. Meanwhile, we have a terrific hour coming your way. As always, live from above the Heineken River Deck at Pier 17, I am Greeny. This is Get Up. Dan Orlovsky is going to join the conversation as we keep working our way towards the Super Bowl, starting now with title time trash talk with the legends ready to go. The bulletin board material finally flies. You'll hear who said it next. Then, hold everything. This eagle may still be ready to fly out of Philadelphia. Shefty thinks it might happen. We've got the latest. And then, a legendary NFL voice comes down hard on Deshaun Watson. My question is, what does that mean? We'll get you to the answer to that and a whole lot more as we get up with you in this hour, starting right now with the Super Bowl. And what is at stake on Sunday? Well, everything. Tom Brady seeking his 7th championship. He already has the most of any player with 6. He could also be looking for his 5th Super Bowl MVP. On the other side, you got Patrick Mahomes. His 3-year run is historic. With a win Sunday, he'd be the first starting quarterback ever to win 2 Super Bowls before turning 26. And as for the Chiefs as a whole, they're looking to become the first repeat champ since the 2003-04 Patriots, who, by the way, were quarterbacked by Tom Brady. Meanwhile, here's the Chiefs chairman and CEO, Clark Hunt, with his thoughts on this game.
Tom doesn't need any more Super Bowl victories. I do know which team's gonna end up on top, and it's the one with the young quarterback.
Huh. So as we bring Dan Orlovsky into the conversation with us from Tampa this morning, Dominique Foxworth, your thoughts, was that was Clark Hunt. Is Dominique all right? Have we lost Dominique? Dominique is frozen. For one brief second, I thought he was just looking down. Okay, one way or another. Dan Orlovsky, let me come to you. What was your reaction to Clark Hunt saying he knows who's going to win? It's the team with the young quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, if I had Patrick Mahomes, I would probably feel the same way about that. You know, I obviously he knows the kind of football team he has, the roster that they've put together, the leadership that they have from top to bottom, and then they know that they have the best player in football, and so that breeds a lot of confidence. I think he's respectful of understanding that they are going against the greatest quarterback to ever play, the greatest football player to ever play in the NFL, but they got the hottest thing going, and that gives them so much of a comfort to understand that no matter what the situation is in the game, right? We've seen Patrick in so many different situations, and Andy Reid. We've seen them in so many variables, up, down, close game, fourth quarter, need a comeback, something like that, that they've always been able to accomplish it. So I think that just breeds a high level of confidence for their whole organization.
Fair enough. I mean, maybe that's what passes for trash talk among billionaires these days. We will see. In the meantime, Dominique obviously remains frozen. So, Dan, let me then come back to you here because we've not had you this morning. What is the one most important factor you are looking for that will decide this game on Sunday?
Yeah, I'd say the Tampa Bay secondary playing against, obviously, all the weapons that Kansas City has offensively. But it's also layered. Like, first of all, how many different one-on-one matchups are they willing to roll the dice on with Tyreek Hill and press man coverage or Travis Kelce and press man coverage? Who are they going to put on Travis Kelce when he's split out by himself as a wide receiving option? And then there are going to be moments in this game where they're going to decide, okay, we are going to roll the dice, so to speak, and we are going to double Travis Kelce and we are going to double Tyreek Hill. Well, that's going to leave some other guys on some islands, you know? And so does a player like Mecole Hardman step up? As great as Tyreek Hill is, we know he's this explosive player and that they're going to push the ball downfield or at least try to push the ball downfield with his ability. But once they decide to try and shut those guys down, are there going to be other players in Kansas City's offense that win their matchups on a consistent basis? So certainly like this chess game of how Todd Bowles defensively with their secondary is going to make the calculated moves with coverage, and then when he does, Does Kansas City, both Patrick Mahomes and some of those other receiving options, a Mecole Hardman, a Pringle, maybe some of the backs, do they make them pay for it in one-on-one matchups?
And I cannot stress this enough times. All of that video that you were seeing of Tyreek Hill torching the Buccaneers came from the first quarter of their game about 2 months ago. He had 200 receiving yards in the first quarter. So, Lewis, let's get down to this. When you play Kansas City, you're picking your poison. What Dan is essentially saying is you're picking the way they're going to try and kill you, and you're just going to do the best you can. So if you're designing that defense, how are you doing it? What is it you are taking away saying, whatever else happens, you're not beating me with this?
Well, look, it's a fireable offense if you don't do everything you possibly can to neutralize Tyreek and Travis. It just is. If someone else beats you, then someone else beats you. But, I mean, there's no way you can go into a game worrying about whether or not it's Mecole Hardman or if it's Clyde Edwards-Helaire who wind up winning the football game, because, you know, you also have other players on your defense who are getting paid as well. So they're going to have to win their one-on-ones against them. But if you go into a game as a defensive coordinator and you go, well, I can't double Travis and I can't double Tyreek every play because someone else will beat me, then you probably shouldn't be a defensive coordinator, because that's what you have to do. You have to live with the ramifications of saying, look, we have to commit more people to taking care of these other two, because Travis is maybe one of the best, maybe the best receiving tight end of all time in this game, and Tyreek Hill functionally, you know, may be the fastest football player to ever play this game of all time. So they demand special attention, and that usually means it's going to take more than one guy. So the other thing that you would be emphasizing too is this: if you do not get your work done at the line of scrimmage, if you do not get your work done at the line of scrimmage, we're going to have to do some work on you as far as replacing you after the season's over, because these guys are just going to take you to the woodshed. So there, really, it's two things. It's go ahead and just allocate the assets to make sure you try and neutralize them. And two, emphasize technique at the line of scrimmage. That's where this game is going to be won. If you lose there, it's over.
Go ahead, Danny.
Yeah. I think Lewis makes a great point. And the way I would phrase it, Greeny, is this. You're not going to win the game strictly because you slow down or shut down Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce, but you will 100% lose the game if you don't. And that has to be the mindset. I think that's kind of what Lewis is referencing. You got to go into the game going, we're going to shut at least one of those guys down, if not both of them. And that's going to give us the chance to win the game, because if we don't, I already know we don't have to play. We don't have to play. If I don't, we will 100% lose.
Yeah, we could look up stats on when a receiver has 200 yards in the first quarter of a game, how often his team loses. It's not going to be particularly often. I'm told we have Neek back. We're going to do a special edition of On the Clock here, and it's going to be bold prediction style. We are looking for bold predictions for Sunday's Super Bowl 55. And Dan, you're first up. 30 seconds. Give me a bold prediction of something you expect to see on Sunday.
Yeah, Clyde Edwards-Helaire goes for over 150 yards and wins MVP of this football game. So we're all talking about all week of how the Tampa Bay defense is going to slow down Patrick Mahomes in the pass game, rightfully so. But no one runs more of RPO, the run-pass option in the NFL, than Kansas City. Now, oftentimes, they turn it into a throw. But I think Tampa's defense is going to defend that pass first and try to force that handoff as many times as possible. And I think Clyde Edwards-Helaire is going to run against some light boxes, less people in the run defense box-wise, and he's going to have a really good opportunity to run the football. He wins MVP.
That could be a sneaky good prop to keep a close eye on as we head into the weekend. All right, Neek, welcome back. Give me a bold prediction. 30 seconds. Go.
I mean, I don't even want to follow Dan. That is as bold as they come. I was going to say that Gronk's going to go for 100 yards because he hasn't done it very often this year. He went for 100 yards last time, was against the Kansas City Chiefs. And Gronk is a guy that we know Brady trusts in those big moments. But now my prediction seems kind of lame next to Dan's incredibly bold prediction.
I don't agree. I think Rob Gronkowski with 100 yards receiving is a bold prediction because it does not feel particularly likely.
You're so sweet, Grady. Thank you.
I think that satisfies the criteria of being bold. I'm told Graziano is our third predictor here, so Dan Graziano joins the party. 30 seconds, Dan Graziano. Give us a bold prediction. Go.
The Tampa Bay Buccaneers will score a touchdown on defense. They've been living on turnovers this postseason. They've got 7 takeaways. During their current 7-game winning streak, they have 12 takeaways, tied for the most in the league over that stretch. I think one of them turns into a touchdown on Sunday. And Dominique, don't worry about not being bold enough. Remember the old expression, no chance taken, no bacon. No heart, no Pop-Tart.
How many of these do you have?
Is there somewhere?
We've had some silly ones here. The amazing number out of all of this that we've looked at from the Super Bowl, in Tom Brady's 9 Super Bowl appearances, do you know how many points his team has scored in the first quarter in all 9 of them combined? 3. 3 points in 9 Super Bowl appearances in the first quarter. Keep a close eye on that. All right, as we continue, we're getting to this. And Orlovsky, I can't wait to hear your take on the latest with Carson Wentz. He wants out of Philly, according to Adam Schefter. The question is, will the Eagles be willing to accommodate him? We'll tell you how likely it is that he still gets moved. And then Matthew Stafford on his way to L.A. and Sean McVay's offense. One of our guys is predicting a career year for number 9. You'll hear who as we continue. It's Get Up on ESPN.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than 1 rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code PARLAY and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code PARLAY. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
All right, we got a good one tonight in the Big Ten. Number 7, Ohio State taking on Luka Garza, and number 8, Iowa. It goes down tonight, 7 Eastern, from Carver Hawkeye on ESPN and on the ESPN app. All right, time for Lewis.
I was going to give him a pass because he don't even know how dumb that was. You were the number 1 overall pick in the draft.
Well, if somebody has to go, it's going to be you.
Wait, no, let me finish. With that comes the expectation that you're going to have a QBR better than 5.
Get that. Hold on. I'm not even listening.
I anticipate this getting ugly.
We call these the Chronicles of Riddick. And if only because that picture is the coolest thing I've ever seen in my entire life. But Lewis will give us his take on some of the most intriguing storylines around the league. And let us start, Lewis, in Chicago. What do you expect the Bears to do?
Grady, look, we talked about this on your radio show a couple weeks ago. The Bears are big players in the quarterback market. This is something that is a major point of emphasis for them. And every big name that you're talking about at the quarterback position, I can promise you this, the Bears are in on and trying to rectify that situation. Matt Nagy is determined to make sure he addresses the situation and that they have someone pulling the trigger for them in 2021 that he can work with and run his offense. So look for them to be making a big move.
It makes a lot of sense. There's a hot seat there for both the GM and the coach. All right, next stop is the young quarterback Mac Jones out of Alabama, who a lot of people are falling in love with. What are you seeing?
Look, when I was down in the Senior Bowl last week in Mobile, I thought he could not have done any more than he did down there in practice as far as his ability to process information and put the football where it needs to be put from an accuracy standpoint. I think in the first round, I think the floor for him is somewhere in the low 20s, 21 to Indy, 20 to Chicago. I don't see him dropping any further than that. It'll be interesting to see how the rest of the NFL really values his skill set, especially from an arm strength perspective, because as far as everything else is concerned, this kid is aces across the board.
I pointed it out a million times. He graduated from college with a 4.0 GPA in 2.5 years and has a master's degree now. One of the things that we sometimes underestimate is smarts. All right, let's talk about Matthew Stafford. What do you expect for him now that he's a Ram?
Well, I think without a doubt he's going to have a career year out there in L.A. with Sean McVay and this offense. Look, I'll just let you in on something. When I interviewed for the general manager position with the Detroit Lions, the number one thing I said about Matthew Stafford is this. An offense needs to be constructed around him that is very similar in structure to what San Francisco and to what Los Angeles does. I didn't know it was going to mean him actually being traded to Los Angeles, but that's the kind of coach I would have wanted to bring in for him as far from an offensive perspective, because I think he will just tear it up in that kind of offense. And obviously, Sean McVay is making me look smart from that perspective because he sees the same thing. I think he absolutely tears it up in 2021.
Okay, the Chronicles of Riddick. Fascinating indeed. And let me bring the rest of the guys in here to react to that, because we haven't done a lot on Stafford this week after Monday because there's just been so many different things. Dominique Foxworth, with Matthew Stafford at the helm now and that excellent defense and some of the other pieces, do you consider the Rams to be the favorite next year in the NFC?
Wow, the favorite in the whole NFC. I'm not sure I'm willing to go that far, but I think that the Packers are still up there considering that they haven't gotten any worse. Maybe they even get better, but I do think that they'll probably see them in the playoffs at some point because Matthew Stafford is good, but even without Matthew Stafford, this team was good and competitive with all the NFC teams and with the Green Bay Packers. With a bit of a boost at quarterback, I think that can't do anything but help them propel them forward and make them a much better team because he does have the ability to reach the great levels that we see of some of these great quarterbacks. I don't think that his failures in Detroit are all on the surrounding cast, but I certainly think with a better surrounding cast and you ask him to do a lot less, he can be much greater in those small situations.
Well, I got to tell you, I feel like that was sort of a long way of saying, yes, they are the favorite in the NFC. If you really think about it, Louis Riddick, they better be because they've given themselves basically a 1 or 2 year window. And if they don't do it right now, they're not doing it, Louis. And you know everything about team building. They've put everything in the center of the table on these next two seasons. They better get one done.
Yeah, I think what Sean has said, that being Sean McVay, is this. I think this guy puts my offense over the top. I think this guy makes me so multiple on offense that we'll be able to match what we can do on defense. And we're going to be in that Super Bowl here, you know, when it's played in the year 2022. And I have a hard time disagreeing with that thought process. Now, if it doesn't work out, then obviously you leave yourself very shorthanded in terms of the number of assets that you have to build this football team out going forward. But in the short term, if you're winning a Super Bowl and you sell out to win a Super Bowl, is anybody really going to care? If you bring a Super Bowl to Los Angeles, is Stan Kroenke going to go, hey, but you know what? The price that we pay for this Super Bowl is the fact that we don't have a couple number one picks. He's not going to care. He wants
exactly
to win
right.
a trophy. And Sean thinks that this is going to put him over the top. And if it works out, he's going to look like a genius. And I wouldn't put it past him.
Well, Graziano, that's what it is. They have gone all in a way that we rarely see any NFL team willing to do. It'll be a fascinating thing to watch how it plays out, Dan.
Yeah, an owner that doesn't care how much money it costs, a front office that doesn't care about mortgaging the future with first-round picks because they know they're always going to have a chance with Sean McVay as their coach. Look, we have seen that offense go to the Super Bowl with Jared Goff running it. We've seen that offense go to the Super Bowl with Jimmy Garoppolo running it. We've seen Matt Ryan and Aaron Rodgers win MVP awards in that offense. If Sean McVay brings in an upgrade at quarterback, that makes the Rams even more formidable than they were this year. I can't call them the favorite yet. I don't know who the 49ers are going to have at quarterback. Packers are still around. The Seahawks still have Russell Wilson, but they're going to be right there in that picture for sure.
No, the Rams have gone for it. And so I have to say I appreciate it. I'm the one who says you can't try and win this championship and another championship later at the same time. So we see they push all their chips to the center of the table. Let's see how it plays out. Meanwhile, speaking of seeing how it plays out, the drama continues in Philly with Carson Wentz. Is there any way the Eagles might now grant his wish to leave town? That's the question. We've got the answer. It's next. It's Get Up on ESPN.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use the code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only, not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use the code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
It's Thursday, so it's time to throw it back. And we're only going back 3 years on this day in one of the most famous plays in Super Bowl history, the Philly Special. They called up Philly, Trey Burton to Nick Foles, part of one of the most astonishing Super Bowls you've ever seen. I was there in Minneapolis 3 years ago today as the Eagles knocked off Brady and the Pats 41-33. Stick around. Speaking of Brady, you'll find out why his worst nightmare will be standing on the opposite sideline during the Super Bowl, and we are not talking about Patrick Mahomes. You'll hear what that is as we roll on. This is Get Up on ESPN.
Thank you.
All right, tonight's the night. Looking forward to this. Our next 30 for 30 is Al Davis versus the NFL, one of the great rivalries between the former Raiders owner and the former NFL commissioner, Pete Rozelle. It's 9 Eastern. It's tonight on ESPN and the ESPN app.
Carson Wentz is soft. This is the bed you made.
Wentz takes the snap. Intercepted.
Decision made. Eagles head coach Doug Peterson naming Jalen Hurts the new starting quarterback.
Here's Hurts. He's floating the football and is caught. Touchdown.
Jalen Hurts is Philadelphia. Jalen Hurts is freaking Rocky.
It's going to be all eyes on number 11.
The Eagles hired Nick Sirianni to be their head coach. All right, this is the saga that we have been covering forever, right? Carson Wentz coming off a terrible year, and you know that he got benched. You see all the numbers, and it was just awful. But when they made the choice to fire the coach and bring in Frank Reich's assistant, Nick Sirianni, we figured, well, that's the end of that. Wentz is coming back in Philly. Adam Schefter yesterday said, maybe not so fast.
He wants to leave the franchise. That's why the trade still is in play. This is all real, and this is made up. And just because he would like to be moved doesn't mean he will be. If I had to guess, I would guess he is traded. That'd be my guess, okay, at some point this offseason. But again, they're not just going to trade him. They're not looking to get rid of him. They're not.
So that was Shefty. And when Shefty speaks, the world listens. And Dan Orlovsky, we've not had you on this yet today. What is your reaction to this idea that it seems, at least from the outside, like the Eagles have probably done just about everything he might have wanted, and he still wants out?
I agree with Adam Schefter. I think Carson Wentz wants away from Philadelphia. For a long time, people thought, well, he wants away from Doug Peterson. I think he wants away from the city. I think he wants away from the organization. You know, Greeny, what you do speaks so loudly, I need not hear what you say. And we live in a time frame in society where it's the easiest time ever to make some form of a statement. And Carson's had two opportunities to do that. His first head coach in the NFL was fired. He had the opportunity to post something on Twitter, post something on Instagram saying, you were my first head coach ever in the NFL, and while it didn't work out the way we wanted to for the long run, I'm forever thankful for our time together. Well, then we move on and they hire a head coach, Nick Sirianni. Another opportunity to make some form of a statement. Some form of, I'm looking forward to the future, new beginnings, fresh start, excited to work with you, and nothing. For those two reasons, I'm sitting back and going, Carson Wentz doesn't want to be in Philadelphia. Maybe it wasn't as tied to Doug Peterson, and it is tied to the organization and what has transpired over the past couple of weeks, or past couple of months. I can tell you this. I had a coach call me last week and spend 20 minutes on the phone with me asking about what my thoughts were with Carson Wentz, the good and the bad, why it went south this past season, because they've got a high level of interest in him. And I think two teams that should be calling are Indy and Chicago. Both of them have win-now defenses, and both of them have some form of a tie in the past with Carson Wentz, being Frank Reich in Indy and John DeFilippo in Chicago. So I agree with it, Shefty. I think it's more likely he gets traded than not.
So I want to ask you because for two reasons. One, you have studied Wentz about as closely as any player, and two, your insight into the quarterback stuff is as good as anybody we have. Do you believe he can be fixed? Are you convinced Carson Wentz in the right situation can become the quarterback that we all thought he was on the verge of being maybe as recently as a year ago?
There's no doubt about it. Because the fixing needs to happen mentally. The fixing needs to happen horizontally with a relationship that is built upon communication and trust and confidence. And when and that's something that can always be fixed, especially with new people, you know, or people that you have a relationship with in the past that was really good, that never soured, that never did go south, that there was never any form of a betrayal or that disconnect. And so, yeah, because the talent is still there. The physical talent does not just go away. And so once he gets with somebody or people that he believes is aligned horizontally with him, and that can rebuild that trust and confidence and communication, you're going to see the Carson Wentz from 17, 18, and 19. Absolutely. That is the easiest part of this relationship.
Huh. So there's a lot to unpack here. Dominique, where do you want to jump in on this? I mean, the idea that he still wants out with everything that's happened, if indeed that does become public, is going to be very difficult for him to continue in Philadelphia. We all know that's a challenging place in the first place. What do you take from this, Dominique?
Right. I mean, I think it's hard for him, given how he's played, to take that stand. fan, and given the fact that it was perceived that they ran off a Super Bowl winning quarterback to keep him, and they ran off a Super Bowl champion coach to keep him. So the pressure is on him to perform. So I understand everything that Dan's saying, and the talent is there, and maybe it is all mental. But that mental, that also impacted his accuracy, apparently. Like, it wasn't just that he was grumpy. It was also that he kind of forgot how to throw the football, and he held on to it for too long. And maybe all that goes away once he goes to somewhere and he finds a coach that he likes, and maybe that's all for the best, because I don't think that it's going to work out in Philadelphia, whether it's because he doesn't like the city or the organization or whatever. Sometimes you need a fresh start. It seems that Carson Wentz knows that, and maybe the Eagles need to come around to understanding that also, because if he doesn't want to be there, things aren't going to work out.
Perhaps. Now, his fresh start becomes a major problem for the Eagles financially, and Graziano will weigh in on that in a second. But, Lewis, I want to come to you, because you were earlier talking about all these teams that should be looking at a quarterback, and you mentioned Chicago, who Dan just brought up. If you're the Bears, is that interesting to you? Or if you can't get Deshaun Watson, do you want Carson Wentz?
Well, yeah, I mean, I would look into it, but now remember, Matt Nagy has a direct line right to Doug Peterson. I mean, these guys coach together. I was in the same building with both of them together at the same time, so he's going to get the lowdown on Carson Wentz. And quite honestly, look, if I was in the front office of the acquiring team right now, or a potentially acquiring team, look, the level of mental fragility that's being displayed here would start to concern me some. It really would. I would really need to kind of, like, dissect this young man and try and figure out, like, exactly what is it? What is the reason why? Because I'm a big believer in trust and communication. I've gone on this show and numerous shows many, many times that I believe that is the hallmark of true high-level team building, is trust and communication. So what was it that really broke down for you? Where is it that you feel as though your trust was breached? Where did you feel as though this organization failed you? Because if it's simply because, look, we drafted a young quarterback, you didn't like how necessarily that jived, you know, in the meeting room and how they handled you later on in the football season, if it's because the city of Philadelphia was too tough and you didn't like having to try and exercise the ghosts of Nick Foles and all, then, I mean, come on now. I mean, you're a big boy, and we're paying you a lot of football. And mental toughness and resolve and resiliency is part of the game. Not to say that we can get away with betraying you in some way, shape, or form that really affects your mental frame of mind, how you play the game. But come on now. I mean, what really is the problem here? So I would really be taking a cautious, slow approach to this situation if I was going to go ahead and take on this contract and take on this reclamation project, because it is that. He needs to really fix himself and play much better here in 2021.
Yeah. So let me get Graziano in here, because all this sounds great until you start figuring out the money. And the money is going to be really complicated. Right, Dan?
It factors in a lot of ways. Look, if they trade him before March 20th, they absorb a $33, $34 million dead salary cap hit for this year. Now, that's about what his cap number is already if he's on the team. So that could be a wash as long as Jalen Hurts can be your starting quarterback. This is a team that's already in cap trouble. March 20th, they got to pay him a $10 million roster bonus. So either you want to trade him before that and make the acquiring team pay that money, or you want to wait till after June 1st when you can split your salary cap hit up over 2 years. So those are the logistics of the financials. To Lewis's point, what are you going to get? Like, if you're the acquiring team and you're taking on this player who needs fixing by all accounts and who costs all this money, what are you going to give the Eagles to compensate them for their former first round pick? Remember, part of the price the Rams paid in the Matt Stafford trade was extra to get the Lions to take Goff's contract off their hands.
Yeah, Orlowski, I got 15 seconds. Go.
I think Lewis's point is spot on. The biggest question that teams are going to have to ask Carson that are interested in trading for him is, what did you learn over the last year? Like, what did you learn over the last year that you're not going to allow what did transpire in Philly to transpire wherever we are? Because he certainly had his hand in it, right? And so I think that's the biggest question is, what did you learn over the last year that you need to fix and get fixed? And if he answers it the right way, he still can be a top 10 player at that position in the NFL.
All right. So as the quarterback carousel continues to spin, this is a fascinating one. Meanwhile, let's turn our attention back to the Super Bowl, shall we? We're 3 days and counting away from Super Bowl 55. And here's a number. Tom Brady is 2-3 in his career against Steve Spagnuolo defenses, his worst record against any defensive coordinator that he's faced at least three times. In those five games, Brady produced 9 touchdowns, took 13 sacks, His QBR is 12% lower than his career average. And, of course, remember, one of them very famously was in a Super Bowl when Spagnuolo was the defensive coordinator with the Giants. So the question is, why is Spag so successful against Brady? Dan Orlowski, you have tape. Show us.
Yeah, Greeny, I think Steve Spagnuolo is going to go after everybody but Tom Brady. We often equate pressure with the defense and just the quarterback. But Spags is going to ask himself, okay, can I confuse Tom Brady? The answer is going to be no, not over four quarters. But then you go, can I confuse the offensive line and force them to communicate? Can I confuse the receivers? Who's the hot guy? What's the route? And can I go after the tailbacks? And if you go back to week 12, that's what Steve Spagnuolo did, was attack those tailbacks. It's a seven-man protection. The six offensive linemen have those six highlighted on the defense. Leonard Fournette, you got the seventh guy. Has to be somebody in the secondary. Your eyes should be going right at that nickelback that's blitzing, but inside, they're inside. Your rules are completely wrong. That forces pressure on the quarterback and a wasted throw. Another opportunity, third and 15, where Leonard Fournette, you have anybody off the right side. Great. Now your rules are going to be right. Your eyes are going to be exactly where they need to be. Go get one of those guys. Don't Olay them. Don't just duck your head and allow those three runners at the quarterback. Now, the end result's going to be great because Brady's going to make an incredible throw and Godwin's going to make an incredible catch. Steve Spagnuolo's going, nuh-uh, we're going to continue to bring it. Now, Fournette, get off the field. Give me Ronald Jones. You got seventh guy. Here comes Matthew off the right edge. Look at the space he leaves between him and Matthew. He's going to give you a move. You can't leave that gap. The ball's got to come out of Brady's hands too soon. Interception. But everyone's like, oh, man, that's long ago. They fixed it, right? 2 weeks ago, NFC title game. Watch Fournette. Watch the safety off the left edge. Unblocked, heaved interception by Tom Brady. So I think Steve Spagnuolo is going to sit there and go, you know what? Those tailbacks haven't proven to me that they can pick up our pressures. And I don't have to confuse Tom. I have to confuse the backs. I have to go attack those guys and make sure that they can show me that they know who to block, and then they can. And I think it's a huge key in this game for Kansas City's defense.
That's really good. Dominique, what do you see?
I know. I think that's outstanding tape because one of the things that we talked about earlier in the week is continuity. And that all comes into play. Leonard Fournette is new. A lot of those some of those receivers are new. Some of those old linemen are rookies. Mm-hmm. Some of them are new. Like, that stuff is where the breakdowns happen. You're not going to confuse Tom Brady no matter how many coverages you come up with. You might get him once or twice, but you're not going to win a game on tricking Tom Brady. But these other guys can fall for it.
That's fascinating. Lewis, quick final thought.
Yeah, look, I think there's a number of different things. Look, I think anytime Spags is going up against Tom Brady, he's had the benefit of good one-on-one matchups along the front seven. You saw it in the 2007 Super Bowl when, you know, the Patriots went into that game against the Giants and they were undefeated. The one-on-ones really lost that game for the Patriots early on with Justin Tuck and the way Strahan were rushing the passer. And they have some guys that can do that for Kansas City. Look, Chris Jones and Frank Clark, they can win their one-on-ones. I think, without a doubt, as Dan alluded to perfectly there, their blitz packages are very, very good. They disguise them very, very well. Legarius Sneed and Tyrann Mathieu are very good blitzers. And then their post-snap disguise, their pre- and post-snap disguise, as much as Tom has the answers to most tests, look, every quarterback, once you start hitting him and you also disguise it very well in the back end post-snap, it will get them rattled. And Spags seems to be able to tie all that stuff together every time they play this guy, and it really does wind up benefiting them. I would expect it to be no different on Sunday. That's what makes this matchup so intriguing.
They beat him up in that game, if you remember it. Okay, outstanding. Let me take a break on that thought. We have much more to do as we continue here. Going back to Deshaun, who has made it abundantly clear he wants no part of the Texans. So why is one NFL legend telling him to just suit up and play? We'll get to the bottom of this as we get up with you on ESPN.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Lift every voice and sing.
There have been prominent investments in historically black colleges and universities. Makur Maker, one of the top high school prospects in the country, committed to playing basketball at Howard, and Hall of Famer Deion Sanders became head football coach at Jackson State. Kyrie Irving of the Brooklyn Nets joined in as well, offering to pay tuition for 9 Lincoln University seniors.
And with that, we welcome you back to our studios. Greeny here with Get Up on ESPN with you commercial-free for the next almost 12 minutes here on ESPN. And that's when First Take will take over the top of the hour. Is it fair to compare Patrick Mahomes to Michael Jordan? One prominent member of the Chiefs organization says yes. Max, Molly, and Stephen A. debate that and more at the top of the hour. Again, we're with you commercial-free until then. And we are just 3 days away from the Super Bowl. But Deshaun Watson is already looking ahead to next season, hoping to be playing for a new team. We know he has requested a trade out of Houston. Former NFL coach Dick Vermeil was on KJZ on ESPN Radio this morning. Here's what he said.
I'm a little disappointed, to be honest with you, because, you know, the image that he has presented coming out of college and through the draft and through his career so far in Houston has been so positive, so positive. And I don't think this approach really reflects what he has presented over the past few years. So I'm disappointed, you know, and I just don't think we can, anybody, whether it be that football team or the other 31 teams, start allowing players to step in and make decisions who runs them, who coaches them, and all these kinds of things. But to get to the point where you're sort of demanding you want to say, I think is beyond the NFL player's contract.
That was Dick Vermeil, who, of course, is a legendary coach, won a Super Bowl. I see the expressions. I see Graziano shaking his head. Dominique, what's your reaction?
I mean, I think that it what Dick Vermeil said and what Brett Favre said, like, it reeks of someone who has never been failed by an institution. Like, this idea of these organizations over people, to me, is kind of ridiculous to me, because Deshaun Watson has done nothing wrong. You can think about all of his career in Houston. He's been damn near perfect. And we have a laundry list of ways that the Texans have failed him. And I don't understand why, if Deshaun Watson would have been a terrible quarterback, they would have cut him. We called him a bust. We'd have laughed about it, and then we wouldn't have talked about it anymore. But somehow, in a situation where the Texans have continuously failed Deshaun Watson, somehow it's considered disappointing that he demands to want more. And the idea that we want our athletes to play for the love of the game and to care about winning, and the idea that paying them enough money should make them okay with losing, okay with being failed, okay with having a front office undercut their efforts, like, that to me is absurd and unbelievable. Like, I believe in Deshaun Watson and the things that he's done way more than I believe in the Texans, and I believe he deserves an opportunity, frankly, no matter how much they are paying him, to go elsewhere. Like, if you owned a dog and you somehow treated that dog badly, you would be like, but I feed you, so maybe you should come back. I am not in favor of raising any generation or supporting anyone who condones people coming back to be mistreated just because they're getting paid well. So that, to me, is a problem.
To be clear, because you referenced what Brett Favre said, when we got the Dick Vermeil sound, we decided to play that because it's newer. But what Favre had said is, you get paid a ton of money to do a certain job, just do it and let the chips fall where they may. He actually said, I think we make too much money to voice an opinion. So that was what Brett Favre said. Louis Riddick, what is your reaction?
Look, I think all this stuff where people are now are kind of sitting here judging Deshaun Watson based off of the fact that he has expressed that he wants a trade somewhere else. He wants to play somewhere else based on the fact that he feels as though he was either lied to or people didn't live up to their word as far as how they were going to communicate with him. It's just absolutely asinine and absurd that people are now are saying, well, I'm disappointed in Deshaun. Well, you don't know necessarily what it was that were the conversations between him and the principal decision makers and what they had agreed upon as far as their level of communication and how much they were going to collaborate as far as what the direction of the franchise was going forward. And based on the people who I've spoken to, look, there was supposed to be some significant collaboration or at least some significant communication about how we were going to right the ship going forward, because let's understand something. He is the franchise quarterback. They paid him a lot of money for a reason, not simply because he's a good quarterback, because he's a good human being and he's a leader and he's someone that they respect. That's why you make those kind of investments in people like this. So then when you breach that trust, if that person then gets upset about it and says, hey, look, I don't think it's in my best interest then to continue working here. Can we see if we can facilitate a move somewhere else? All of a sudden now people are upset and they're disappointed and they're going to say, well, you know what? You're getting paid a lot of money. You should just shut up and play. That's just ridiculous, and it is insulting, and it's insulting to someone of Deshaun Watson's character, especially if you're not taking it all into, rather keeping it all in the proper context as to why he arrived at this level of disappointment in the first place. But that's because you don't want to see it that way. You want to see it from one perspective, and for whatever your reasons are that you want to see it from that singular perspective, only you know. But get off this young man's back. I think he has a very legitimate gripe as to why he wants to take his talents elsewhere. And if they wind up going ahead and moving himself elsewhere, fine. If they don't, then he'll have to live with it. But to attack Deshaun Watson's character in any way, shape, or form, I think is just absolutely absurd.
Dan Graziano, what did you think?
If you go to law school and you're one of the best hotshot young lawyers in the country, there is not a draft of all the top law firms who get to pick you, and then you're stuck there for 4 or 5 years no matter what, and you're supposed to just shut up and write briefs. If you go to medical school and you're one of the best doctors coming out, there's not a draft where all the hospitals get to pick you and you have to sit there for 5 or 6 years, no matter how lousy it might be, and just deal with it because that's the medical school or the hospital that picked you. These guys, these 25-year-old athletes who know how good they are, recognize a system that is completely unfair to them and has been long before Dick Vermeil and Brett Favre were a part of it, and they see an opportunity to fight against that, to push against that, to you know, argue for their own rights and to exercise their leverage. I think it's great for the NFL and for the world in general that people are able to take ownership of their situations like this. And I think if Deshaun Watson doesn't want to be there and he has the opportunity to get himself out of there, good for him for exercising it.
Yeah, there seem to be circumstances that are going on here that are beyond what many of the people commenting on it seem to be aware of. That's another piece of this that I think is important. But we'll leave it there for the moment. Let's see how it plays out. Meanwhile, we do have news here. Dan Graziano, let's run the hurry up through some stuff. What is the latest on the Kansas City COVID situation?
Again, second day in a row, no news is good news. No new positive tests, no new close contacts identified. We're in that window now, Greeny, 4 days before the game. If either team has a positive test or high-risk close contact, those players will not be able to participate in the game. So everyone's got to be very, very careful, and they are. So far, so good. Again, there was the incident with the barber. Two guys identified as close contacts that should be back in time for the game for the Chiefs. On the injury front, Sammy Watkins, Chiefs wide receiver, has been dealing with a calf problem that has kept him out. Was able to practice on a limited basis yesterday. If that continues, there's a chance and there's optimism that he will be able to play in the game on Sunday. The Chiefs are better when he's on the field. Watkins obviously wants to be out there. He's one of a few pending free agents in this game who could be playing their last game with the team. On the injury front for Tampa Bay, a couple of their safeties, Jordan Whitehead and Antoine Winfield, able to practice on a limited basis yesterday, as well as Antonio Brown, wide receiver. Chance that all three play in the game Sunday. Again, we'll see as the practice week goes along what they're able to do. Jason Pierre-Paul held out of practice yesterday, but that's not unusual. They've been kind of limiting his work because of a knee issue over the last couple of months. Unless he misses another practice, there's no reason to think there's any issue there in terms of him being available for the Super Bowl.
Okay, so the good news is it feels like both these teams are very healthy going into this game. Let's hope it stays that way. One more thing. I want you to hear this. Speaking of the Bucks, One who is definitely playing in this game is Levante David, their star linebacker, and he shared a fascinating story about Tom Brady's competitiveness. Give this a listen.
When I realized that it was real, when I realized that, like, all the other stuff don't really matter unless it's a Super Bowl, it's like after we won the NFC Championship, I guess somebody was crying, and I guess, like, I heard him. It's like, what the f*** you crying for? Are we not done yet? No, I had a little two tears too, so I wiped my
Oh, you a little teary-eyed also.
I'm tripping, man. We still got work to do.
All right, I'm just trying to put myself in that position, Dominique Foxworth. I've just won the NFC Championship. I'm crying tears of joy, and Tom Brady comes over and yells at me because the job is not done. What do you think?
I mean, Tom Brady is different. I think a lot of football players, a lot of athletes, like, put on this face and want you to believe that they don't care about anything else other than winning until the final job is done, and they will not celebrate until the end. But to be honest, you win a playoff game, you get happy. You want to celebrate, unless you're a crazy person like Tom Brady, and you're mad because people are smiling after they won the biggest game that they ever played in. But that's why Tom Brady is Tom Brady and has 6 Super Bowls and been there 10 times. He's that guy, and he brings it out of everyone on the team, I guess. But hopefully they can find some happiness away from football, because it feels like if winning a championship game doesn't make you happy and you're mad at other people for smiling and crying tears of joy, then you got some real soul searching to do after this game is over.
In fairness, Brady does have more games of Super Bowl experience all by himself than the rest of the Buccaneers roster combined. Lewis, what do you think?
Hey, I think Levante's comments are perfect, man. I'm cracking up. He's like, yeah, man, I'm tripping. We got other work to do. I thought that was just the perfect response. He didn't want Brady to see him cry. He was like, yeah, man, why is he crying? He's tripping. I could just picture that. And I'm just sitting there going, I would have been that guy too. Like, yeah, Tom, what are you saying? I think it's great. I think this is it. I think this is exactly what they needed down here in Tampa Bay for this football team. Those are just the moments, man. I miss that so much about the locker room. Those kind of things when they happen, because they're so pure, man. And you just can't get that anywhere else.
Graziano, you don't strike me as an easy crier. Like, you just feel to me like a person who would not cry easily under almost any circumstances. Do I have you pegged?
Look, I feel like we did a great show today. I feel like we did a great show yesterday, but no one should be celebrating because we got another show to do tomorrow. And I don't want to see anybody partying about today's show.
That is exactly right. Myself, I'm known to tear up during commercials every now and again. All right, thank you, everybody, for getting up with me, all of you, and all of you. We'll see you back in Better Than Ever tomorrow. I'm going to ESPN Radio right now. First Take starts next.